This is the Medical Beat on 97.1 FM Talk.
All right. Hey, good morning, everybody. It's Saturday morning at 10 a.m., and that can mean only one thing, which is that it's time for the Medical Beat. I'm your host, Dr. Steve Harvey. You're listening to KFTK 97.1 FM, and we're going to have a great topic today, a great topic and a great host. I'll introduce the host in just a little bit. The topic we're going to talk about today is something that's very, very relevant to today's world. It's going to be a topic about a specific way of dealing with everyday stress, something that's useful for pretty much everybody, and also useful for people who are already dealing with things like stress and depression. As you all know, we've had a lot more stress recently with what's been going on in the world, with medical worries, economic worries, not being able to do the stuff we want to do, and just not knowing how long this is going to drag on for or how this is going to go. So we're going to talk about that specific strategy for dealing with stress and anxiety. And that specific strategy is something called mindfulness. Now mindfulness is something that I know very little about, but luckily we have brought with us a leading expert on mindfulness. So we have here Dr. Laura Chakas. Hello, Dr. Chakas.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you bet. Yeah, thank you so much for being here, Dr. Chakas. So mindfulness, that's your thing, yeah?
Oh, yes, it is. Yes, I have enjoyed learning about it and practicing it and teaching it over the past several years, definitely.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, so I guess there's about 100 things I want to ask you about that, but can you kind of start with sort of the bare basics with mindfulness 101? What is mindfulness? What is that?
Sure. I like to describe it as exercise for the brain. So if you think about physical exercise, how it transforms the body in many different ways, mindfulness is like an exercise for your brain that transforms your mind. And of course, we know that what happens in our mind affects everything in our lives. So as you said in the intro, it definitely can help reduce stress, anxiety, even depression. And it also even helps us with our physical health, that lowers blood pressure. It can just increase positive emotions, makes people happier, just enjoying the present moment. And so that's a lot of what it is in practice, is coming back to the present moment every time the mind wanders away. So that's kind of the exercise part of it, is just we notice our mind has wandered and we bring it back to the present moment by using one of the easiest ways is just using one of the five senses. So, a simple exercise to become mindful, like right now, is if you just look around the room, notice, what do you see? What you see, that's in the present moment. What do you hear? Notice that. What do you feel? Touch your chair or table, and just notice, that sense of touch. And same with smell. And if you happen to have some breakfast still left in your mouth, what do you taste there? And just going through any of your five senses brings you right back to the present moment, and then you're being mindful. And that's really, really one of the main ways to practice it.
Yeah. And what is it about this mindfulness that helps people, or how is it that being aware of the surroundings with your senses, how does that make people better?
Yeah, great question. Cause that's definitely what I get in the classes I teach. We start with this, mindful eating exercise, and it is hard to translate, like, well, how is this going to help me with my anxiety? So, it starts with that awareness, that present moment awareness. And so if we can learn to come to the present, come back to the present moment, shift our attention, then we can manage our emotions better, because a lot of what causes anxiety is a focus on the future. So, right now we might be in the moment feeling okay, doing okay, but then the worry pops in our head. How long are we going to be in quarantine? Is my mom going to die? am I going to get sick? How long is this going to all last? And how am I going to get a job? And, you know, all these what ifs and questions, really mostly about the future. And so if we can shift our mind back to the present and kind of get grounded, centered in the present moment, it helps reduce the anxiety in the moment. Regular practice can actually make changes to the brain that causes, you know, more lasting changes. So it's not just that you have to always do it in the moment, but it'll start to reduce your anxiety and stress response when you get triggered again.
Yeah. Nice. So I guess, so one thing I'm wondering is this is something I don't think I really got this until now. So is part of the main idea that a lot of the things that cause anxiety are sort of hypothetical things in the future, whereas, you know, things in the current moment are much less anxiety provoking. So you kind of shift attention to what's happening right now. Is that sort of the idea, or is that part of it?
Yeah, that's definitely a big part of it. And, you know, with what's going on right now, you know, there's a lot of truth to the worries, or there's, you know, often people are worrying about things that are very unlikely. Now, even these things that may happen, what we tell people often is that even if it may happen that you may get sick or you may be stuck inside for another few months, it doesn't help to worry about it. You know, that worry doesn't get you anywhere. And so just being able to come back to the present and just get to that sense of like, okay, what's going on right now? And checking in with yourself and recognizing that, you know, okay, the way things are right now, that's really all we can control. We can't often control the future. And those efforts to do that by worrying or, you know, ruminating or overthinking it really often cause us more harm than good. So that's a big part of it. The other part about the awareness piece is, you know, we start with that, like I said, using the five senses and also using the breath. That's a major thing of focus on the breath to get grounded back to the present moment. But then what we also can learn from that is to start identifying where we feel the emotions in our body. So this is really important, really for all ages. We started teaching this with kids and teenagers, and it's so helpful if they can start to notice when their anxiety is building. And this is true for really any emotion, anger too. If you can start realizing, okay, I get this pit in my stomach and then it starts to rise and I get a tightness in my chest. If you can feel it at the earlier stages, you have a much better chance of being able to use some coping strategies to like help yourself calm down or, you know, make a choice that is more in line with your values versus going out and acting recklessly or impulsively and doing something you're going to regret later.
Right. Yeah.
So there's lots of different parts of it. You know, I think there's just so much to it, and I know it's so hard to explain. And so and I teach these courses, I have found the best way, and not just me, this is what research has shown, the best way to really understand mindfulness is to practice it regularly. And so the research is done usually on people who have taken an 8-week course. And through that 8 weeks, the recommendation is to practice about 10 to 20 minutes a day for every day for those 8 weeks. And that's when you're really going to see more change. Comparing it to physical exercise, when you are, you know, you're not going to see a change just by taking a jog one day. You're going to have to exercise regularly over time to see those changes.
Right. Yeah. So mindfulness is something you have to, you can't just have someone explain it to you. You can't just read a Wikipedia article and start doing it. You have to kind of you kind of have to learn about it and practice it for a while before you really get the hang of it. It sounds like
exactly. Yes. I mean, a lot of people are using apps or YouTube videos to practice the meditations, which is a really good way to practice mindfulness. But often they come up against roadblocks or obstacles, and without having an instructor guide them through, they often just quit and give up. That's what I've seen a lot in my individual therapy practices, that people will just give up on it. But when they sign up for this 8-week course and they, you know, stick with it, they really can get through those obstacles and develop a solid practice and really see all the benefits that mindfulness has to offer.
Right, right. Yeah. Huh. And some of these things with mindfulness, it sounds, is it kind of similar to meditation? Does it overlap with that? Is it the same sort of idea?
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, we say with mindfulness, meditation is one of the main ways that we practice mindfulness. What I was saying before with the five senses, that's more of an informal mindfulness practice. And then the formal practice is when you sit down to meditate. The difference with, I think, the way people generally think of meditation is that you will be, you know, chanting or trying to clear your mind, trying to have a blank mind. Instead, with mindfulness, a mindful meditation, it's generally a guided meditation that keeps guiding you to return your attention back to the present using an anchor like the breath. You know, the breath is like your anchor to keep guiding you back to the present moment every time your mind wanders away. Yeah. So it's a different type of meditation than people generally think of when they hear the word meditation.
Right. Okay. Well, that sounds good. Hey, when we come back, we're going to find out more about mindfulness, and we'll be back in just a little bit.
Yours is mine, left and right, there's still two sides to everyone. You and I get on with life and pray we'll find a better one.
You're listening to The Medical Beat.
All right. Hey, we're back. This is The Medical Beat, 97.1 FM. News talk. No, FM talk. That's what it is now. I'm your host, Dr. Steve Harvey, and we have with us Dr. Laura Chakas, who is talking with us about the practice of mindfulness. And there's a whole lot to talk about with mindfulness, and I think it's something that might be particularly handy in these stressful times we have now. So one thing we were talking about during the commercial break is I wanted to ask Dr. Chakas, can you tell us about, I think when people hear mindfulness, they picture all sorts of different things. So are there some common misconceptions about mindfulness, or what are some of the myths about mindfulness or the misconceptions that people have?
Yeah, that's a great question. So one of the main misconceptions I hear is that people will think of it just as simply a relaxation technique. And it's really so much more than that, as I explained before, that, you know, thinking of it as exercise for the brain, and it can change your brain in so many different ways. So when you think of it just as a relaxation technique, you lose out, or you're missing, I guess, a lot of the benefits. But not only that, is that it's not always relaxing in the moment. Again, kind of like comparing to the physical exercise, some people really enjoy running and feel great while they're doing it, and some people don't enjoy it so much. But either way, if you run regularly, you're going to get those physical health benefits. So mindfulness is the same way, and I really encourage people to keep trying, even if when they first try it, they might feel a little weird or might feel kind of anxious or uncomfortable, just because it's different. It's just not something we're used to doing, which is, you know, tuning into the breath or tuning into the body, just focusing in on what we're feeling and thinking and what's going on around us. And so sometimes it is often relaxing. I'd say that is a common effect of it. But often it's not relaxing at first, but as you practice over time, you will for sure get those stress reduction benefits, anxiety reduction, all of those benefits. But it definitely takes time. So that's a key misconception, is that it's a relaxation technique. I guess another thing is that it's a quick fix. You know, people sometimes think, oh, I'm just going to do this and feel better right away. Kind of just like as I addressed there, it definitely takes time. I think the other thing is people often think of it as maybe either a religious thing, like it's, you know, they think of like the Buddhist or Hinduism, you know, meditation kind of connotation that we get of like, with, like I said before, kind of chanting. Uh-huh. Yeah, something like that. It's really different from that. It really is just sitting and being guided by just an everyday person, you know, just like me, just talking like this. I'm not putting you in a trance or hypnotizing, anything like that. It's just guiding you to keep focusing back to the present moment. So I think that's another, big misconception that we get, that we hear a lot.
Yeah. And that kind of reminds me of the next thing. It sounds like it's not really like a new age hippie, yippy skippy kind of thing, or
exactly. Yeah. There you go. Right. There's another kind of misconception. I think that, a lot of people had thought that, but then through the years of, there's such extensive research on the effectiveness of mindfulness. I think it's kind of losing that image that it's, this young new agey kind of, even though I would say it's still alternative medicine, but it's getting to be much more mainstream because of all the research showing how effective it is.
Yeah. And of course, I guess the term alternative medicine means different things to different people, but I guess there's a lot of good evidence that mindfulness really helps and really makes things better. So can you tell us about some of the science that shows that it works? Have they proven it works, or how do they do that?
Yeah, well, so really, there's so much research they've done. Most of it is, looking at people's brains. They've done a lot of brain scans using MRIs of people, before they start practicing mindfulness regularly, and then after 6 or 8 weeks of regular practice. It's interesting that, that really does take an amount of time of regular practice. I often also compare it to taking medication. And we know, like with a lot of like antidepressant medications that are used for anxiety and depression, they say it takes like 4 to 6 weeks to become effective and you have to take it every day. And I tell people meditation is that same way. It's not affecting the brain in the exact same way, but it really, really takes that regular practice. I can't stress that enough. I know I keep repeating that, but so what they've shown in those brain imaging studies is that there's actually specific neural pathways and areas of the brain that actually light up and, become more activated after this regular practice. And so these are the pathways related to things like that, relaxation. These are more, happiness, kind of joy, as well as focus. And another major benefit is increased focus. So a lot of people find that it helps them focus with school, with work. So students are using it, and a lot of businesses are starting to use it. Actually, they have been for a while over, on the East and West coasts, but starting to use it more here in the Midwest to increase productivity at work. And so there's research. It's really interesting. If you Google like almost anything and say, does mindfulness help this? You'll probably find a study. There's that many, research studies done, and they're not all using MRI. So some are just using, either self-report questionnaires or with like schoolwork, they're showing it with grades improving, and with businesses, they've shown increase in productivity, efficiency. People are much more efficient. And I noticed that myself, definitely. Like if I'm kind of feeling all over the place, I'm not being very productive. If I do a meditation, and I've been practicing regularly, once you're practicing regularly, often then just kind of doing it one time can like bring those benefits kind of back to the forefront if they're starting to fade. So I definitely find I can focus better on my work and get things done more quickly.
Cool. Yeah. And like you said, I know a lot of big corporations and other organizations are using mindfulness to try to, to help to improve the efficiency and the happiness of their employees. And I only know this because as I mentioned before, I read the Wikipedia article right before we did the show, so that I know a little bit about mindfulness. And so the U.S. Army also uses mindfulness it's definitely a thing. So that's definitely
widespread
stuff.
That reminds me too, athletes are using it too. You hear a lot about professional sports teams using mindfulness. They're starting to do it more with like college and high school teams, but it's definitely a growing field, but it's really spreading pretty far because of it just helps with so many different areas of our functioning.
Right. It sort of helps with all sorts of things. So I hear some mindfulness sounding kind of music there. We chose this music especially for this topic. I hope you enjoy it. And that music is Chad telling us that we have to go for a commercial break, but we are going to be right back. We're going to talk more with Dr. Chakas in just a few moments.
You're listening to The Medical Beat.
We're back. I like that little jingle there. Okay, we're back. This is The Medical Beat, 97.1 FM Talk. I'm your host, Dr. Steve Harvey, and today we're talking with Dr. Laura Chakas, who is an expert on mindfulness and CBT, and we're talking about mindfulness today. And I think the first thing I want to ask about is one thing I wasn't totally clear on is it sounds like mindfulness is something that's helpful for people who suffer from anxiety and depression, but it sounds like it's also helpful for people who are, doing okay, but just want to feel better or feel at their best, or what's that about, Dr. Chakas?
Yes, exactly. So, and we were talking before about the research that's been, a lot of research on mindfulness for people who have depression or have anxiety, a diagnosed condition. And there's definitely, evidence to support mindfulness and helping those people feel better. But also, yes, like you said, just for any everyday person, it's really, I think of it also like a preventative, you could call it like preventative medicine. And mm-hmm. again, I mean, I'll just keep coming back to my analogy of the physical exercise. We as doctors, therapists prescribe, often prescribe exercise for depression. Well, you can also use, physical exercise is very helpful for everyone, not just people who are depressed. And mindfulness is the same way in that it can help anyone just feel better, just feel more alert, awake, feel happier, just really enjoying life more and more connected. Another big thing is it improves relationships because it helps people, if you're paying attention in the moment more, think about, if your mind is jumping to the future and all these worries and what ifs, and again, everyday worries, not even someone who's diagnosed with anxiety, but just the worries of all of what's going on right now. Whereas if you were more focused in the present and could focus on the person that you're with, even if you're talking on the phone with them or however it is that you're with them, if you're focused more with that person in the present moment, your relationship is going to improve. So there's a lot of evidence there that it helps you improve relationships, as we talked about before, improving performance at work, school, athletes, performance, musicians, it helps their performance. So there's just so many areas it can be helpful to, yes, every person, and really starting at any age. They start teaching it in preschool often. I usually start teaching, I've started more with kids around the age of 8, but I know that, they are using it in preschools and up to elderly. I have people in my classes, even with some dementia, and they're still getting some benefits from it. So is a very wide range of people that it can help.
Yeah. And how do you teach mindfulness? Like how do you help someone learn how to do that?
Yeah. So, I do in my job, I do individual therapy, but I also teach these mindfulness classes and experience doing both, like teaching it in the individual therapy setting versus the classes, that people benefit the most from the class. And so I'll describe that setting where it's a class usually in our office where we have, about 8 to 12 people, and I co-lead it. So there's 2 instructors and 8 to 10 students, and we meet for an hour each week, once a week for 8 weeks. And each week we do a different meditation. So a guided, mindfulness practice, as well as we do some informal practices. And we talk about, what people notice, and we talk about obstacles to practicing at home to help people overcome those obstacles. And then we also talk about applications of how can they apply it to different situations and how can they, use these mindfulness principles to better their lives in whatever ways they're wanting to. So that's the most effective way. And really the research supports that. And also that's what I've seen in my clinical practice when I've done it with, you know, in one-on-one therapy, I'd say that I might teach it in the same way, but not getting the same effects. And I think it's because people, if they don't make that commitment to that 8-week course, they often just give up. And often I think that it really helps to see others going through the experience together. There's that shared experience and accountability that really, really helps people do best, you know, learn this, the techniques, and keep up with it. And so now, even though we're not in the office, we are doing these online, and we're still getting the same results. Great, you know, great benefits with, we're finishing up an 8-week session right now, and people are really attending and actually finding it really nice and easy to not have to go anywhere and just turn on their computer and do the class. You know, we do it live over the online video. So,
oh, cool. So you do, yeah, you do mindfulness classes over like Zoom or something like that? Or?
Yes, exactly. Yep.
Nice, nice. And I think just a little later in the show, we'll also make sure people know how to get hooked up with that if they're interested, because I think a lot of people might be interested in doing that. It sounds like mindfulness, really, to really be good at it, people have to do it for a while and kind of get some instruction and some guided practice. You know, like we said before, you can't just read about it and do it. And,
right.
I guess like watching YouTube videos might be better than nothing, but graduating from YouTube University isn't always that helpful.
exactly. Yeah. You'll get maybe some benefit from that, but yeah, you're not going to probably get the full benefits, unless you have a trained instructor.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I know that you all kind of combine it with, you combine mindfulness with another thing, which is CBT or cognitive behavioral therapy. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Like how do you combine the two, and what's the difference between those two approaches, and how do they go together?
Sure. Yeah. So they're actually really quite different, because CBT or cognitive behavioral therapy, as you said, is more of a change-based approach. So what we do with that, and that's what I primarily use in my individual therapy practice, is we look at people's cognitions or thoughts, and we look at their behaviors, and we look at how we can make changes to those to affect how they feel. And so it's looking at how to change their thoughts and thoughts, behaviors, and feelings. The mindfulness is much more acceptance based. And so instead of changing, we're looking at how can we learn to accept the way that we're feeling? How can we learn to just sit with these feelings? We may not be able to change them, but can we just allow them to be as they are? And it's actually been, even though there's such different approaches, combining them together, and there's an actual course, mindfulness-based cognitive therapy, that really melds these two together nicely. And it really is helpful, because the idea is that you can learn to sit with and tolerate emotions, but then you can also become aware of, well, maybe this thought isn't so helpful, and maybe this is one that I'd like to challenge and learn to change. Or maybe this behavior isn't helping me. Maybe a healthier behavior would be more helpful to me. And so you can, through both, you know, I guess combining those two, the change and acceptance, get really good results. And so that's really the approach that actually I'm really doing that more, I'd say, in my individual therapy as well, is focusing much more on the acceptance of based approach of mindfulness combined with CBT.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. So it sounds like in your practice, you see individual patients, and also you do groups and kind of teach people as a group how to do mindfulness.
Exactly. Yes.
And the CBT also. So yeah, I guess there might be some advantages of that. I was kind of thinking about like going to the gym, you know, when you go to the gym and there's other people there, you kind of have to do it because of peer pressure. So maybe mindfulness is kind of like that too. You see everybody else doing it. So you're more,
yeah,
more
exactly. I think that does have something to do with it. There's something to be said for that group mentality of a little bit of peer pressure can help some, because yeah, you see others benefiting, especially, you know, everyone benefits at their own pace, I would say. So sometimes when you're really struggling and you're not seeing the benefits yet, but then somebody else reports, wow, you know, it's really helping with this. And oh, my husband noticed this benefit and all these kinds of changes, then it's like, oh, well, I better stick with it so that I can get these changes too.
Right. Right. Yeah. 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 So how about, and I guess, so you're sort of focusing on mindfulness and CBT in your practice. I guess we just have a little bit of time left before we go out on break, but I was just wondering, out of all the different things that different psychologists do for their careers, was there anything in particular that kind of drew you to focusing on mindfulness?
Well, you know, I started with CBT. That's what I, you know, started learning, and the effectiveness of it, especially with anxiety disorders and OCD. And then I started hearing about all the research on mindfulness. And at first I was skeptical, kind of like what you were saying, like, is this some new age thing? But then yeah. I really think the research won me over. I just couldn't, you know, get around like, yeah. Okay, there's just so much evidence here pointing to this. I better learn this. And I practiced it personally. And then once, you know, I saw it, it made me feel better, helped reduce my own anxiety. And wow, then I started using it with clients and I see these changes. So it really was something that not later in my career, but you know, after I'd been practicing about 5 or so years till I really started with the mindfulness approach. And then, now here going on almost 10 years later, it's really one of the main approaches I use.
Cool stuff. Hey, well, we're hearing that here. So we're going to head out to a commercial break and we'll be right back.
You're listening to The Medical Beat.
We're back. I like that little jingle there. Do-do-do-do. Okay, we're back. This is The Medical Beat, 97.1 FM Talk. I'm your host, Dr. Steve Harvey, and today we're talking with Dr. Laura Chakas, who is an expert on mindfulness and CBT. And we're talking about mindfulness today. And I think the first thing I want to ask about is one thing I wasn't totally clear on is it sounds like mindfulness is something that's helpful for people who suffer from anxiety and depression, but it sounds like it's also helpful for people who are, doing okay, but just want to feel better or feel at their best, or what's that about, Dr. Chakas?
Yes, exactly. So, and we were talking before about the research. That's been, you know, a lot of research on mindfulness for people who have depression or have anxiety, you know, a diagnosed condition. And there's definitely, you know, evidence to support mindfulness and helping those people feel better. But also, yes, like you said, just for any everyday person, it's really, I think of it also like a preventative, you could call it like preventative medicine. And again, I mean, I'll just keep coming back to my analogy of the physical exercise. You know, we as doctors, therapists prescribe, you know, often prescribe exercise for depression. Well, you can also use, you know, physical exercise is very helpful for everyone, not just people who are depressed. And mindfulness is the same way, in that it can help anyone just feel better, just feel more alert, awake, feel happier, just really enjoying life more and more connected. Another big thing is it improves relationships because it helps people, you know, if you're paying attention in the moment more, think about, you know, if your mind is jumping to the future and all these worries and what ifs, and again, everyday worries, not even someone who's diagnosed with anxiety, but just the worries of all of what's going on right now. Whereas if you were more focused in the present and could focus on the person that you're with, even if you're talking on the phone with them or however it is that you're with them, if you're focused more with that person in the present moment, your relationship is going to improve. So there's a lot of evidence there that it helps you improve relationships, as we talked about before, improving performance at work, school, athletes, you know, performance, musicians, it helps their performance. So There's just so many areas it can be helpful to, yes, every person, and really starting at any age. They start teaching it in preschool often. I usually start teaching. I've started more with kids around the age of 8, but I know that, yeah, they are using it in preschools and up to elderly. I have people in my classes, even with some dementia, and they're still getting some benefits from it. So is a very wide range of people that it can help.
Yeah. And how do you teach mindfulness? Like how do you help someone learn how to do that?
Yeah. So, you know, I do in my job, I do individual therapy, but I also teach these mindfulness classes, and experience doing both, like teaching it in the individual therapy setting versus the classes, that people benefit the most from the class. And so I'll describe that setting where it's a class usually in our office where we have, about 8 to 12 people, and I co-lead it. So there's 2 instructors and 8 to 10 students, and we meet for an hour each week, once a week for 8 weeks. And each week we do a different meditation. So a guided, mindfulness practice, as well as we do some informal practices. And we talk about, what people notice, and we talk about obstacles to practicing at home to help people overcome those obstacles. And then we also talk about applications of how can they apply it to different situations, and how can they, use these mindfulness principles to better their lives in whatever ways they're wanting to. So that's the most effective way. And really the research supports that. And also that's what I've seen in my clinical practice when I've done it with, in one-on-one therapy. I'd say that I might teach it in the same way, but not getting the same effects. And I think it's because people, if they don't make that commitment to that 8-week course, they often just give up. And often I think that it really helps to see others going through the experience together. There's that shared experience and accountability that really, really helps people do best, learn the techniques and keep up with it. And so now, even though we're not in the office, we are doing these online, and we're still getting the same results. Great, great benefits with, we're finishing up an 8-week session right now, and people are really attending and actually finding it really nice and easy to not have to go anywhere and just turn on their computer and do the class. We do it live over the online video. So,
oh, cool. So you do, you do mindfulness classes over like Zoom or something like that? Or?
Yes, exactly. Yep.
Nice, nice. And I think just a little later in the show, we'll also make sure people know how to get hooked up with that if they're interested, because I think a lot of people might be interested in doing that. It sounds like mindfulness really, to really be good at it, people have to do it for a while and kind of get some instruction and some guided practice. Like we said before, you can't just read about it and do it. I guess like watching YouTube videos might be better than nothing, but graduating from YouTube University isn't always that helpful.
exactly. Yeah. You'll get maybe some benefit from that, but yeah, you're not going to probably get the full benefits, unless you have a trained instructor.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I know that you all kind of combine it with, you combine mindfulness with another thing, which is CBT or cognitive behavioral therapy. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Like how do you combine the two, and what's the difference between those two approaches, and how do they go together?
Sure. Yeah. So they're actually really quite different, because CBT or cognitive behavioral therapy, as you said, is more of a change-based approach. So what we do with that, and that's what I primarily use in my individual therapy practice, is we look at people's cognitions or thoughts, and we look at their behaviors, and we look at how we can make changes to those to affect how they feel. And so it's looking at how to change their thoughts and thoughts, behaviors, and feelings. The mindfulness is much more acceptance based. And so instead of changing, we're looking at how can we learn to accept the way that we're feeling? How can we learn to just sit with these feelings? We may not be able to change them, but can we just allow them to be as they are? And it's actually been, even though there's such different approaches, combining them together, and there's an actual course, mindfulness-based cognitive therapy that really melds these two together nicely. And it really is helpful because you can, the idea is that you can learn to sit with and tolerate emotions, but then you can also become aware of, well, maybe this thought isn't so helpful. And maybe this is one that I'd like to challenge and learn to change. Or maybe this behavior isn't helping me. Maybe a healthier behavior would be more helpful to me. And so you can, through both, you know, I guess combining those two, the change and acceptance, get, you know, really good results. And so that's really the approach that actually I'm really doing that more, I'd say, in my individual therapy as well, is focusing much more on the acceptance of based approach of mindfulness combined with CBT.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. So it sounds like in your practice, you see individual patients and also you do groups and kind of teach people as a group how to do mindfulness.
Exactly. Yes.
And the CBT also. So, yeah, I guess there might be some advantages of that. I was kind of thinking about like going to the gym, you know, when you go to the gym and there's other people there, you kind of have to do it because of peer pressure. So maybe mindfulness is kind of like that too. You see everybody else doing it. So you're more.
Yeah,
more
exactly. I think that does have something to do with it. There's something to be said for that group mentality of a little bit of peer pressure can help some. Because you see others benefiting, especially, you know, everyone benefits at their own pace, I would say. So sometimes when you're really struggling and you're not seeing the benefits yet, but then somebody else reports, wow, you know, it's really helping with this. And oh, my husband noticed this benefit and all these kinds of changes, then it's like, oh, well, I better stick with it so that I can get these changes too.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So how about, and I guess, so you're sort of focusing on mindfulness and CBT in your practice. I guess we just have a little bit of time left before we go out on break, but I was just wondering, out of all the different things that different psychologists do for their careers, was there anything in particular that kind of drew you to focusing on mindfulness?
Well, you know, I started with CBT. That's what I, you know, started learning, and the effectiveness of it, especially with anxiety disorders and OCD. And then I started hearing about all the research on mindfulness. And at first I was skeptical, kind of like what you were saying, like, is this some new age thing? But then I really think the research won me over. I just couldn't, you know, get around, like, okay, there's just so much evidence here pointing to this. I better learn this. And I practiced it personally. And then once, you know, I saw it, it made me feel better, helped reduce my own anxiety. And wow, then I start using it with clients and I see these changes. So it really was something that later, not later in my career, but, you know, after I'd been practicing about 5 or so years till I really started with the mindfulness approach. And then, now here going on almost 10 years later, it's really one of the main approaches I use.
Cool stuff. Hey, well, we're hearing that here. So we're going to head out to a commercial break and we'll be right back.
You're listening to The Medical Beat.
All right. Hey, we're back. All right. This is The Medical Beat. I'm your host, Dr. Steve Harvey. It's 97.1 KFTK. And if you missed the first part of the show, then first of all, what were you thinking? And second of all, you can still catch the first part of the show. For the first part of the show, we had, and we still have her here, we had Dr. Laura Chakas telling us all about mindfulness. Mindfulness, which is a strategy for stress reduction, for anxiety reduction, for helping everyday people, and also helping people who particularly suffer with depression and anxiety. So we talk all about mindfulness and also how it combines with CBT, which is cognitive behavioral therapy. If you want to know more, and tell me if I've got this part right, Dr. Chakas, but so it sounds like you and your and or your practice, so you're in a practice that's sort of a couple miles west of Interstate 270 on Olive, and I guess you're doing a lot of stuff online also, but if people want to find Dr. Chakas, the correct spelling is C-H-A-C-K-E-S, is that right?
Yes.
Woohoo, mm-hmm. I got it. C-H-A-C-K-E-S, Dr. Chakas, and it's tell me if I've got this right, the Center for Mindfulness and CBT. Is that
you
right?
You got it right. Yeah, yeah. The only thing is we're east of 270. We're a couple miles east of 270 on Olive. Oh. You got that right. And yeah, the Center for Mindfulness and CBT. And the easiest way to find us is our website, which is mindfulstl.com.
So, we have an easy-to-remember website. That's good. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so you can find all our services. We have a bunch of different providers, therapists, psychiatrists, all kinds of services. And we teach the mindfulness courses there, like you said, at the center. But right now, everything's being run online.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So mindfulstl.com. And right, you're east of 270. What was I thinking? Yeah, and also people can use Google. So Google is a thing, also. So,
yeah, that's right.
So easy to find. And you've got some sessions coming up, I know.
Yeah, we'll be starting the beginning of June a new 8-week session on mindfulness based cognitive therapy. And just, again, like you said, it's really for people with anxiety and depression, as well as just anyone who wants to reduce their everyday stress and just kind of enjoy life more, feel happier and focus better, any of those things. So if you want to get more information, just go to our website and you'll see the information.
Yeah, well, I think there's probably at least a few people out there who would like to feel less stressed out. So that sounds good. So, yeah. All right. So that's good. And I guess also your practice is accepting new patients for regular care also for psychotherapy and things like that. Okay. Okay,
yes, good. We are. Yeah,
so that's a place to find a therapist too, if you need one. So
exactly. And that's all being done online right now temporarily until we feel it's safe to go back to the office.
Yeah, nice. Okay, good to know. So one more time, this has been Dr. Laura Chakas from the Center for Mindfulness and CBT, and the website is mindfulstl.com. All right. So, hey, we are going to switch gears now, and we're going to talk about something a little different. We're going to have a moment of science. Can you play the thing, Chad?
Yeah. And now for a moment of science.
Science. Science, yes. Yes, brothers and sisters. We're going to talk about science now. We're going to talk about science. So what we're going to talk about here is that with the COVID pandemic recently, pretty much everything not having to do with COVID has been sort of on the back burner in the media and on the back burner in the newspapers and the websites and so forth. So you might be surprised to learn that there's been a whole bunch of good science going on that has nothing to do with the coronavirus or with COVID. Science is still advancing. It's just you don't hear about it because understandably, everybody is very preoccupied with what's going on recently. So I'm going to tell you about one advance that's happened recently in science that probably you have not heard about yet, and it's an advance in understanding the illness of schizophrenia. And just as kind of a real quick update here, so schizophrenia is an illness that afflicts a little less than 1% of all people. They suffer from hallucinations, delusions, and also just cognitive problems, just problems thinking straight. And medicine helps, but it doesn't cure it. And we've got a long way to go to do better at treating schizophrenia. So just a lot of the disability in the world is from schizophrenia. So the recent advance is that they found a lower level of a substance in the brains of people who have schizophrenia. The substance is called sphingosine 1-phosphate. That's five syllables, and that exceeds the allowed syllable count for this show by two syllables. So we're going to call it S1P is what they call it. So this S1P is something that's involved in cell signaling and also in the development of the brain. It's involved in a whole lot of different things. So we found, or scientists have found, an abnormality in that molecule and the way the body handles that molecule that in the future, pretty good chance that'll help our understanding of what really causes schizophrenia, and it might also lead to a better understanding of what we can do about it. So that's it. That's our moment of science. Hey, quick question. Dr. Chakas, can the schizophrenia benefit from, can you do mindfulness for schizophrenia?
Well, yeah, that is an interesting question and something, you know, we don't see much in our clinic, but yeah. I would say that, you know, just the general stress level. I mean, if someone with schizophrenia were to have their, you know, symptoms managed by medication, then it would definitely help them manage their stress and anxiety that comes along with their illness. So definitely they could get, I would assume, some benefit if their main psychotic symptoms are under control.
Right. Yeah. Because they can get stressed out like anybody else, I guess. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, our time's almost up. Thank you so much for being here, Dr. Chakas. And this has been The Medical Beat. We'll be back next week. Ciao.
You're listening to The Medical Beat.
All right. Hey, we're back. All right. This is The Medical Beat. I'm your host, Dr. Steve Harvey. It's 97.1 KFTK. And if you missed the first part of the show, then first of all, what were you thinking? And second of all, you can still catch the first part of the show. For the first part of the show, we had, and we still have her here, we had Dr. Laura Chakas telling us all about mindfulness, which is a strategy for stress reduction, for anxiety reduction, for helping everyday people, and also helping people who particularly suffer with depression and anxiety. So we talk all about mindfulness and also how it combines with CBT, which is cognitive behavioral therapy. If you want to know more, and tell me if I've got this part right, Dr. Chakas, but so it sounds like you and your practice, so you're in a practice that's sort of a couple miles west of Interstate 270 on Olive, and I guess you're doing a lot of stuff online also, but if people want to find Dr. Chakas, the correct spelling is C-H-A-C-K-E-S, is that right?
Yes.
Woohoo, mm-hmm. I got it. C-H-A-C-K-E-S, Dr. Chakas, and it's tell me if I've got this right, the Center for Mindfulness and CBT. Is that
you
right?
You got it right. Yeah, yeah. The only thing is we're east of 270. We're a couple miles east of 270 on Olive.
Oh.
You got that right. And yeah, the Center for Mindfulness and CBT. And the easiest way to find us is our website, which is mindfulstl.com.
So, we have an easy-to-remember website. That's good. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so you can find all our services. We have a bunch of different providers, therapists, psychiatrists, all kinds of services, and we teach the mindfulness courses there, like you said, at the center, but right now everything's being run online.
Wow. Okay. So mindfulstl.com. And right, you're east of 270. What was I thinking? Yeah, and also people can use Google. So Google is a thing, also. So,
yeah, that's right.
So easy to find. And you've got some sessions coming up, I know.
Yeah, we'll be starting the beginning of June a new 8-week session on mindfulness based cognitive therapy. And just, again, like you said, it's really for people with anxiety and depression, as well as just anyone who wants to reduce their everyday stress and just kind of enjoy life more, feel happier and focus better, any of those things. So if you want to get more information, just go to our website and you'll see the information.
Yeah, well, I think there's probably at least a few people out there who would like to feel less stressed out. So that sounds good.
Yeah.
All right. So that's good. And I guess also your practice is accepting new patients for regular care also for psychotherapy and things like that. Okay.
Yes, good. We are.
Yeah, so that's a place to find a therapist too if you need one. So
exactly. And that's all being done online right now temporarily until we feel it's safe to go back to the office.
Yeah, nice. Okay, good to know. So one more time, this has been Dr. Laura Chakas from the Center for Mindfulness and CBT, and the website is mindfulstl.com. All right, so hey, we are going to switch gears now, and we're going to talk about something a little different. We're going to have a moment of science. Can you play the thing, Chad?
Yeah. And now for a moment of science.
Science, yes. Yes, brothers and sisters. We're going to talk about science now. We're going to talk about science. So what we're going to talk about here is that with the COVID pandemic recently, pretty much everything not having to do with COVID has been sort of on the back burner in the media and on the back burner in the newspapers and the websites and so forth. So you might be surprised to learn that there's been a whole bunch of good science going on that has nothing to do with the coronavirus or with COVID. Science is still advancing. It's just you don't hear about it because understandably, everybody is very preoccupied with what's going on recently. So I'm going to tell you about one advance that's happened recently in science that probably you have not heard about yet, and it's an advance in understanding the illness of schizophrenia. And just as kind of a real quick update here, so schizophrenia is an illness that afflicts a little less than 1% of all people. They suffer from hallucinations, delusions, and also just cognitive problems, just problems thinking straight. And medicine helps, but it doesn't cure it. And we've got a long way to go to do better at treating schizophrenia. So just a lot of the disability in the world is from schizophrenia. So the recent advance is that they found a lower level of a substance in the brains of people who have schizophrenia. The substance is called sphingosine 1-phosphate. That's five syllables, and that exceeds the allowed syllable count for this show by two syllables. So we're going to call it S1P is what they call it. So this S1P is something that's involved in cell signaling and also in the development of the brain. It's involved in a whole lot of different things. So we found, or scientists have found, an abnormality in that molecule and the way the body handles that molecule that in the future, pretty good chance that'll help our understanding of what really causes schizophrenia, and it might also lead to a better understanding of what we can do about it. So that's it. That's our moment of science. Hey, quick question, Dr. Chakas. Can the schizophrenia benefit from, can you do mindfulness for schizophrenia?
Well, yeah, that is an interesting question and something, you know, we don't see much in our clinic, but yeah. I would say that, you know, just the general stress level. I mean, if someone with schizophrenia were to have their, you know, symptoms managed by medication, then it would definitely help them manage their stress and anxiety that comes along with their illness. So definitely they could get, I would assume, some benefit if their main psychotic symptoms are under control.
Right. Yeah. Because they can get stressed out like anybody else, I guess. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, our time's almost up. Thank you so much for being here, Dr. Chakas. And this has been The Medical Beat. We'll be back next week. Ciao.